My name is Wilhelm Angerer. Today is the 21st of July 1971. I am supposed to tell the story how I get into rocket business. I worked for Siemens and Halske in Siemensstadt, Berlin, on control systems for airplanes. And Siemens had to organize, on request of the German government, a brand new plane, exclusively devoted to development and production of equipment for guidance and control of airplanes. And this was well established. Peenemünde needed all the control systems for their rocket work, so we worked together with Peenemünde in the territory. I was in charge at Siemens Luftfahrt Network in Hartenfelde with development of engine and control equipment for large production quantities. Dr. von Braun and Steinhoff came repeatedly to Hartenfelde, Berlin, to discuss with us the needs and possible application of existing equipment which we had developed for the Air Force, German Air Force. And so we developed for Peenemünde special hydraulic amplifiers, rather machines. We developed also instruments for navigation, gyroscopes, such things.
Primarily for the A4 program?
For the RP, the A4. But they were partly modified pieces which they developed for the German Air Force.
I see. So a lot of the Air Force technology fed into the Army missile program.
We were primarily in the business of hydraulic controls for rudders, three axis controls.
Which was not used on A4 though. Hydraulic was it all electrical or servo, electrical servo, or was
it was electrically to last degree.
Yeah.
But it was then used again in Wasserfall.
Oh, you went back to hydraulics in Wasserfall?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
We had a complete hydraulic system for Wasserfall.
Right.
Which was developed in my laboratory. And it was one of the better jobs we did, one of the more interesting jobs.
Were you a production man or a designer? What was your...
No, I was developer.
Developer, yeah. Okay.
I was in the development laboratory for production quantities.
Hey, Fred.
Hi.
Hello. Fred Ardwright.
How are you?
So, we're talking about now the hydraulic system on the waterfall, yeah.
And all the hydraulic systems for the A4.
These were these in production now?
In large production quantities.
Where the hydraulic system?
Yeah.
A4.
See, we built totally 2,000 hydraulic systems per month.
Yeah.
Partly in München, partly in Berlin, Hartford.
Yeah.
2,000 units a month.
That's hard to make.
This was a combined effort for Peenemünde and Air Force.
Yeah. And how much, what percentage of that would be Peenemünde? Roughly a tenth of it? Couple of hundred a month, maybe, or?
Maybe. I don't really know what we're thinking. But I got really involved in the effort for Peenemünde is a gyro team.
I see.
They did have a gyro developed by Anschutz in Kiel for the outdoor, before. But this gyro didn't have the necessary accuracy. It was not reliable and not accurate.
Yeah.
So, from down...
Drift from imbalances and so forth?
Yes.
Yeah.
It was just a tire drift from friction and...
Friction and imbalance. Yeah.
Mostly friction. And so, von Braun and also Dr. Steiner both came to my lab in Hartenfelde and asked me if I wouldn't be able to help and design a tire which would be more accurate.
About what time would it be? 43 or so, or 44?
43.
43, yeah.
And so there was an existence already a shadow, which was originally intended for Pinamundi, but it was cumbersome design and didn't work either, and was difficult to manufacture. Mm-hmm. This was mentioned by von Braun. And I looked at this thing and said I could make a much better one than this one. He said, you don't have much time? So I wasn't worried about time, I was worried about permission to do so. Mm-hmm. My boss, which was Kapitän Altfaden, he was the director of Luftfahrtwerke. He did not want to make much effort for Pinamundi. Mm-hmm. He didn't believe in this rocket system.
Yeah.
He was a Navy man.
Navy
but he believed in Air Force.
Yeah.
And I saw a need for this title, for Pinamundi, because von Braun explained to me clearly what it means. And I had good ideas what to do. I knew what I wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So, when can we come back? He said, to see what you can do for us. I said, I don't know. Maybe a week or two. Then I can show you a model, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
After 1 week, I showed him a model. He mm-hmm. came back after 1 week.
Mm-hmm.
And a model built, very crude, from metal, functional, so we could demonstrate
mm-hmm.
what it would look like, and demonstrate all the simplifications and so.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the simplifications? Just more compact?
No, no.
No?
It wasn't more compact, it was just completely deburred.
Deburred, yeah.
All the beautifications taken off.
Yeah.
There was unnecessary things off and
yeah. Simplified, yeah.
Simplified. But I also changed the principle.
Is that one of the gyros here in this picture? Or A3 missile?
So
that's A3.
This is good. Yeah. It's a different
one.
Can you push the button to the wrong?
Yeah. Hold it. Yeah. Okay.
So I simplified. No, not simplified. I always made a major change in the bearing situation.
The bearing.
So it wasn't bind anymore.
Mm-hmm. What kind of bearings were they using?
Ball bearings.
All ball bearings.
All ball bearings.
Yeah.
So we made special ball bearings which do not bind when the shaft bends.
Mm-hmm.
It does the opposite. It clears it.
I see.
And this improves the accuracy at least one decimal point.
Mm-hmm.
So then, after this model was present, I had only one desire, to get permission to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And von Braun said he would get the permission for me to design it and test it.
Mm-hmm. So he'd go straight to the company director and get permission.
Yeah, who was my boss.
Yeah.
And he did not get a straight answer for me. But I went ahead and did it anyway. I felt out of his protection, so they kind of fire me so easy.
Yeah.
If I was fine, they would end up in Pinamundi. That was very
good. Well, you kind of like the rocket business then, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I felt there was a future. So, so the contract was placed to a company. Oh wait, the design went this way. I had three guys who worked on the design for me. They worked actually overtime every night till about 10 o'clock. They were separated from the rest of the group in an extra room.
Mm-hmm.
So they would be undisturbed and just concentrate on this one job. And in 4 weeks, they designed the complete work in all the details, production drawings.
Mm-hmm.
You would call this company A1 document.
Yeah.
There's one document.
Yeah. In
4 weeks. In 4 weeks. The whole work.
4 weeks. Production on.
Yeah. And then a contract was given to a company since my director turned it down to have it done in his own company,
mm-hmm.
at Siemens.
Mm-hmm.
It was another company which had to build the thing. And so made first a complete set of tooling in 100 silos.
Mm-hmm.
In the first 100 silos went faster than expected. It was finished ahead of time.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very tight time schedule. And I remember I did get a letter of commendation for having been able to make a design which worked in production without any change.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the objective, I guess, was to improve the accuracy of the missile on impact that didn't drift off course. Yeah, this is what everyone was looking for.
Two main objectives.
Yeah.
first of all, high accuracy,
yeah,
and second, manufacturability.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be produced in large quantities.
And quickly, yeah.
Quickly,
yeah.
Without special
production capability, yeah. So, what happened then? 100 were built. Were they sent to Kinamundi by this other company?
I don't know exactly what happened to this one. Anyway, they were tested and found to be about 100 times better than the previous barrel.
Mm-hmm.
So the drift rate was about 0.01 degrees per hour.
Still without air bearing?
No, that's very good. Was it per hour or per minute?
Was there any air bearing?
It was 100 degrees per minute.
100 degrees per minute,
yeah.
Was there any air bearing development going on at all? Or was it A4 programming?
No, the air bearing development came much later.
Much later. In this country, then?
No, no. I saw the air bearing development in Germany.
In Germany?
Yeah. But this was really, I would say, maybe the last 50 years ago, maybe in 445.
Who was doing that?
It was in America.
Oh, you were doing
that?
Yeah. Yeah.
But that wasn't the only one. There were air bearing developments in other areas also, in Tanzania.
Yeah. Who was really the... Who conceived the air bearing for the gyros? Is that an old idea?
I do not know who really conceived it.
Yeah.
It
never went into production though. It was all development. Yeah.
That's correct.
Yeah. What kind of additional improvement did you get with the air bearing? A whole order of magnitude more beyond ball bearing or not?
The development of air bearing here was perfected or refined to a useful instrument in this country.
Mm-hmm.
2004,
yeah.
Going around the system.
Mm-hmm. So the Redstone was the first application.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this gyro which I designed for Pinamundi was called LEV3. LEV3.
Oh, I see.
LEV3.
LEV3.
And the three letters stand for L means Luftfahrt,
mm-hmm.
E means electric,
mm-hmm.
and V means Vatican.
That's still used in this country, isn't it?
LEV3.
Does it mean the same thing here, or does it have other meanings?
Well,
there's a German meaning and an American
meaning. The car is a name on. Because when we came to this country, there were about, I guess, 100 or several hundred built,
yeah,
according to the German blueprint.
Yeah? Who did those?
This was done by a company in New Jersey. That is a new support. I forgot the name of the company.
In other words, the Pinamundi documents were used in this country, the
yeah,
old American version.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was also done on the V1 autopilot, because I remember seeing those.
Yeah.
Was it the same company that built those?
No. The V1 autopilot was built by a different company.
It was John something. It's kind of a...
It was
some individual's name, as I recall, but I saw those in Fort Bliss.
If I remember correctly, it was Patan.
Ah.
Who pioneered this. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I forgot.
Mm-hmm.
But that LEV is still used even today, right?
Yeah.
On the Saturn. It's LEV what? Something else?
No.
No
more.
No.
Yeah, but we used some of these for measuring purposes.
Yeah.
And, but not for main control.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The main control is in the FN.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, FN. So the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, the reason why I'm here in this country is von Braun wanted to have a team organized which would be autark, which could make anything and everything needed to build a raft.
Yeah.
And since he knew me, had been knowing me at that time already several years,
mm-hmm.
he felt I would be a good man to be on the list.
Mm-hmm. So were you one of the first ones to come to Bliss?
No, I came in January 46.
46. Yeah. Still pretty early though.
Yeah. It was shipment number 3.
But you were
the first shipment was an airplane load.
You were one of the first ones that were not originally from Pinamundi then, that came over here, yeah?
Yeah. And the second group was a shipment, the boat, and the third group was the boat.
You came on an airplane then?
No.
No.
One airplane, one ship.
I see. One was an airplane.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was William Schultz and those people, I think.
Yeah. I don't know how many.
And who were the first Americans you saw in Germany when you signed your contract? What were you doing at the end of the war? I mean, you still making gyros?
Oh, no. No, we switched over. See, the director of my... We went out of Berlin before the Russians came in and this, on the ground. In a salt mine. 1,800 feet below ground. In Helmstedt.
I see.
Schacht Marie.
Mm-hmm.
And continued to produce what we call Jägersteuerung, an airplane control for hunters.
Mm-hmm.
Hunter plane, what do you call it?
Night fighters?
Fighter plane, yeah.
Night fighters.
Not night fighters. Not necessarily a night fighter.
Just fighters. Yeah.
Fighter plane, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not a bomber.
Yeah.
Fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And we continued to do this.
Underground.
Underground.
Mm-hmm.
Till about April or so. Till the shelter was overruled by the military.
Yeah.
And then when that came, we closed for a few days and continued to work, switched over to commercial existence.
Uh-huh.
Like,
just like that, huh?
When like we had some planes already, see.
Yeah.
We knew the war was lost.
So you're getting ready for the end of the war?
We were ready. We had the group who moved from Berlin to the Marine Bomb to Helmstedt in the mine was composed of people who could design, build tools,
mm-hmm.
manufacture.
Complete nucleus, then.
Complete
for
nucleus.
A new industry, yeah.
For a new industry.
Yeah.
And we had also already a program about a half a year before we moved. We had a program what we would do.
Plan of action, yeah.
Plan of action,
yeah.
With all the tooling, all the raw materials, all the proper personnel. To put this new plane into operation.
A commercial aircraft? Come on.
No aircraft, no.
What,
we made fuse boxes for house installation.
Uh-huh.
And this kind of thing.
Very basic thing, then.
Very basic things, because the house was destroyed.
Yeah.
What was needed were new houses. And for new houses, we need all kinds of things.
Electrical things, right?
Electrical things,
yeah.
It was all kind of
thing. You had a job all right along, no problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you didn't really have any problem as far as looking for a job. You just kept right working with your group.
This went on to the 1st of July.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Russians came. By the kindness, quote-unquote, of the American government, the territory was given free of charge to the Russians.
It's given to them, yeah.
Here it is. Takes the whole world.
Yeah, that was high political decision.
It was the intelligent hybrid position.
Yeah.
And, when I found out that the grapevine is going to happen,
mm-hmm.
I wanted to move the entire park of machine tools, a few hundred machine tools.
Yeah,
100. Maybe, no, not a thousand, maybe 500 machine tools, basic machine tools, lasers, milling machines, what have you.
The grapevine, yeah.
I wanted to move them back.
Yeah.
So I requested a train,
mm-hmm.
a railroad train, it was a 50 boxcar, to load all this equipment and move it back.
Yeah.
So the Russians would take.
Right.
I could not get any cooperation from any American outfit.
This happened to her father, too. He wanted to blow up the lock plant, you know, instead of leaving it, and the Americans left everything functioning, ready to
completely,
go, lock.
Completely unaware of the intentions of trunk of Francis.
Mm-hmm.
Wrong Francis.
Yeah. That's a sad tale.
Yeah.
So you just left everything there, and you don't know what happened to it.
I left everything. I moved out the night when the Russians came in.
The night before?
I left this area, when I got at night, I went back through the post, through the line.
Just sitting there, huh?
Everything. I told my people, I was in command of the whole world, see, because the director of the plane was the first taken away was American.
Yeah.
And I was put in charge of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then I put in charge of someone else. United.
So what month was this now when the Russians took over this area?
This was 1st of July, 45.
Yeah.
So I took my bicycle and a rucksack and a coat and went west.
Had you already thought about coming to this country with Von Braun
people? No.
How did this all come about?
This came late.
Yeah.
This was 1st of July. Before, it was about in June or May, the French people came and wanted me to go to France to work on the aircraft, because they knew I was working on buses cars.
Yeah.
So they wanted to have me in France.
How do they know this? Do they have agents? Everybody.
I don't know how they found out. For me, it's like the names of the fellows who worked on Butterflies, the names of the fellows who worked on the A4, it was known to the, probably the French and the American had exchanged their intelligence with
us. Yeah.
Opened up the books to each other, I assume. Anyway, they came and offered me a contract, and I told this to men, this American, this French officer, I was not much interested. Because I felt, I knew France before, I lived in France for quite a time, and so I was not, I thought I was interested in France.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know anything about America at that time.
Mm-hmm.
I had to leave my company, which didn't have a job for me.
Yeah.
But it wasn't so.
That's right. What happened to the company eventually?
The company,
did you move everything to Western Germany later, or how?
You mean after the Russians had occupied it? Not a screw, not a nut,
it disappeared then.
No, you can't move anything out of the Eastern Territory.
Yeah, I mean some of the people that they saw a company, the same company elsewhere, is what I'm wondering.
Oh, this was so. Siemens knew that the end of the war would be a disaster.
Right.
So they started decentralized in time and organized planes in Western part of Germany and the South.
Yeah.
So if a war catastrophe would come, then there would at least be not all in one place.
But you couldn't go to these new factories and work for them?
Well, you couldn't go anyway. There was no railroads going.
Mm-hmm.
And no bus, no transportation, not even a telephone, nothing.
Yeah.
If you had a letter, the letter could only be transported by a friend or by someone you find on the highway.
Yeah.
Where are you going? I ain't going this way. We'll take a letter along. This was the kind of communication you had.
Yeah.
No telling when a letter arrived or if it arrived.
If it arrived,
yeah. Unbelievable condition.
Yeah.
At this time, it only one interest. How do you feed your family?
Mm-hmm.
This was only interest.
Everything else?
Second.
Yeah.
So I moved my family out of Berlin the year before the war, back to a little village where my wife's mother was at home.
Mm-hmm.
Was there was first place. And so my family and my wife and my two children were there already. So I moved west to meet them.
Mm-hmm.
This was the end of the story as far as I was concerned. With my company, is myself.
Yeah.
So I started as a farmer.
Everybody went to farm, didn't
they? As a farm.
Yeah, everybody farm.
Make hay, cut grass, feed the cattle, and such things.
Yeah.
And then in September, or so it was, in August, because it was, I don't recall exactly the date anymore, maybe it wasn't August. Dr. Kriener and Mr. Neubert found me. How they found me in the western area, in Oldendorf, over Elze, is a mystery to me, either they found me. I was out on a meadow and was raising grain, and these two guys came and said, we are collecting guys who want to go to America. Do you want to go to America? I said, well, I always want to go to America, but right now it seems to be a little hot. So maybe it's only for 1 year, see?
Yeah.
And so, okay, for a year,
I think I'm on vacation. I want to get over there and see what's going on.
And my question was, what would happen during this year to my family?
Mm-hmm.
Who would feed my family?
Yeah.
And so later they told me then there would be an American officer who contact you, and you would say, oh, I have no other details.
Mm-hmm.
So this man came.
You remember who it was? The contact.
He spoke German fluently.
Yeah.
And he claimed to have lived in Switzerland for many years, but he didn't have a Swiss dialect.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, I didn't care. He was very polite, very nice. He gave me a long main form to read. This was a contract that he had to sign.
Yeah.
And I told him I couldn't sign this contract. First of all, I can't read this legal English. And also, this is a very big decision. I have to think it over. At least sleep overnight. And
yeah.
I don't come tomorrow.
Oh, he wants to sign right there on the spot.
Yeah.
On the letter, I just signed it right there.
So he was very nice and polite and said, okay, we'll be here tomorrow. I said, maybe I made a mistake, maybe he's never coming back. I think he said next morning.
Yeah.
And it's all right. I'm leaving the same. This was my first was taking measures at Mercy. They signed it, but I didn't get a paper machine signed.
You didn't get a copy.
I didn't get a copy. I had nothing in my hand. I had orders in memory. I signed a piece of paper. It said 1 year America. The orders for Fort Bliss, Texas. And he was, he told me I should be now ready to be picked up and brought to somewhere. There's a whole transport that he ascended and shipped to America. It could be within a few days, maybe at the most 1 week. So they didn't come. Nobody showed up. I went to all places I could think of, to the American headquarters, whether they were the local headquarters, to find out. Nobody knew a thing about it. And I finally said, well, then I have to go to Frankfurt, to the American headquarters, to the main headquarters, and find out if they know something. They knew nothing. Nothing. Nobody knew anything.
God, just came out of the sky for all of us. Yeah. All purposes.
And then someone told me the whole business was moved to Landshut. It would be best if I go to Landshut in Bayern to find out about it. So in November, I moved to Landshut. I signed my contract on the 15th of September. It was a very important day.
Mm-hmm.
In November, I went to Landshut to find out that the transport had just left yesterday. And the next one goes, I don't know.
But they did know your name anyway.
They knew my name, I had to say I was on the list and all.
And you took your family to Landshut?
No, I left the family that I lived. Out of the farm, out in the countryside. And in Landshut. And in Landshut, I told the soldiers that the ship had left and they cannot go anymore, then I might as well go back home. Forget it. Bye bye. No, you can't do this. You are under our control now. We give you a furlough. You give you a pass, you can be gone, you can tell us where you go, if we can catch you any time, and you need to give us a telephone number, we can reach you, and so on, and so on, and so on. So I told him, all right, I go to my parents, to my parents' house, it's about 100 kilometers west, and I had to be back on the second or third of January, he said this.
Mm-hmm.
And then somewhat about a week or so later, we had all assembled and went to the harbor. And then when the ship on a 14 or 15 day stormy voyage across the ocean to America.
Did you know many of these people you were on the boat
I
with?
I knew several,
yeah. Several, yeah. Well, that helped a little. They weren't all trying to.
Yeah.
Oh. What did you think Texas might be like from just your previous knowledge? Did you expect what you got into there?
Well, of course, I studied the weather maps and the territory of the Atlantic
map.
In advance, I know what it is. I was surprised it wasn't close to the Mexican border.
Mm-hmm.
And I was surprised that I said it's such a secret organization right near the border, so close
to
it.
And
the first bit I couldn't understand. But it wasn't really good.
So you stayed at Bliss then?
4 years.
Yeah.
Till, looks like 4 years, till the 1st of July or so, 1950.
So what did you finally do at Bliss while you were there?
We played volleyball at this point.
Every day. Played games.
Played balls every evening. At 4 o'clock, all doors popped open and everybody was screaming out and playing football. It was our main occupation. Eating and playing football.
Dog life.
and we really had never better than at this time.
Yeah.
Because all the eat we wanted. We ate in the mess on the horses. And we had no problem.
No deadline.
No deadline. We didn't have to write the part. we had all the disadvantages. We didn't have any program. We didn't have anything to do.
No mission.
No mission.
Yeah.
So we had missions. We created some projects.
Yeah.
On paper.
You probably played a lot of chess, didn't you?
Yeah, I was in a chess player. But oh, we organized a big garden, the tiger garden, planted shrubbery and all flowers and did a great tour.
Yeah, right.
And as far as the heat in Texas.
Climb mountains occasionally, yeah.
Oh, if there was no mountain, we did go on top.
Yeah.
All the mountains. Everyone.
I've climbed sugar loaf many times. I used to live
no, I was never a sugar loaf.
Yeah?
No. But the rest of them, most of them. Anyway, it was a very thorough time. She didn't feel it this way, but after what she said, it was very nice. Didn't have to eat. We had no money. And I had no clock and no wristwatch anymore. I just lost a handle on the tip over the ocean. So I couldn't know what time it was. I lost a small handle. The big one was still there. And there was minutes, not for hours.
Just hours.
So I went to the PX and saw beautiful wristwatches in exhibition. $35 for wristwatch. And I really wanted one, but I had no money, I couldn't buy it. The one guy said, it was a German guy, he said, I loan you the money if you want to buy one. Why don't you do it? He was the shipment before I was, and he had already money, but I didn't.
He accumulated a little cash, yeah?
He had already accumulated like a $50 or $100 maybe. He was willing to give me $35. So I didn't want to take the money because I couldn't pay him, they could pay a tax, because I didn't have income. I only got 3 meals in the cafeteria, in the metro. That's all I had, nothing. Anyway, it took me, I guess, 2 months to get money to pay it,
Well, what's in some technical work? Did you design mostly?
We learned English.
Yeah.
And we designed each one his team.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, I designed new airplanes.
You did design airplanes?
Yeah. And also, I went off and on to my friends for a preparation for firing.
You did what? Time, yeah.
I play about 25% of my time in life training.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And this prepares everybody for firing.
Mm-hmm.
We had to change the program, the pitch program. The pitch program, which was originally in the AV3, was about 50 degrees or so. And we needed about 2 or 3 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
Speed up and coming back, so
mm-hmm.
we didn't have to go far.
Yeah, reprogram everything, yeah.
Yeah, this was a mechanics program.
Right.
Chemex.
Yeah.
And the potentiometer was rotating.
What was your reaction to the one that hit Mexico? Were you there for that one?
Yeah, I was there. It was a funny horse. I was right behind. I was south of the fire. It was a launching failure.
Yeah.
We had a spinal.
Yeah.
And then it was at the cutoff button. And I was right next to him, spinning.
Mm-hmm.
2 feet away from him, and he looked up and up and up and up and up. He was there, and he turned around. Too late to push the button. And I remember standing there saying, no sense to push the button. If you push the button, it lands in the puzzle. You might as well let it fly.
It
goes around
the
puzzle
anyway.
It landed behind the corner.
What did the army guys do? Jump in their jeeps to take off?
I don't know what they did. By the time we came home and the heat and heat attack to forklift, everybody knew it already.
Yeah.
Big excitement.
Yeah.
Big
yeah.
excitement. And someone said, stay in service, it is on purpose.
Well, after that you had a rain safety cut off.
We had a safety part.
Safety, yeah.
90 degrees to it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they can't see this way very close. You put it right and left. We were never concerned about this way.
Yeah.
Only concerned, break out right and left.
Yeah.
So with this happened, we put a second button over here, so we could see all the program. This occurred.
Yeah. When did you first hear about Huntsville? What year? 50? You heard about
this
Huntsville?
It was in 49. In 49, we were told there were planes, the whole group would go to Huntsville, so that's an arsenal. There's a large, idle arsenal, which may be a break for us.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful country, it's like home, rolling hills,
yeah,
water, solid roads. It's made it very suitable for us.
Yeah.
Right. But meanwhile, we learned to like it better.
Yeah, that's what everyone said. I didn't want to leave there.
You didn't want to leave?
You became a desert rat. Yeah.
Yeah. We liked the cacti and liked
yeah.
the flowers in the desert.
Yeah.
And
I liked it, yeah.
It was very, we got used to it,
mm-hmm.
all
right. Mm-hmm.
It is like many times, you have to be forced to your better future.
Yeah.
So we were forced to go more or less forth, and simply persuaded to go to El Paso, I mean to Huntsville. And we found it in Huntsville as we learned our way around right now. The people in Huntsville are very friendly to the people.
Mm-hmm.
They felt we would change the way of living. I remember an argument I had with Carl Wolterstorff.
Carl Wolterstorff?
Carl Wolterstorff.
Yeah, the utility man.
Yes. I wanted to have in my house. 2 years after we came to Huntsville, I wanted to build a new house. I bought a house in West Long first, and I built a new house, and I wanted electric heat.
Mm-hmm.
And he said to me, you're not going to waste our cost, our precious electricity just for heating a house.
Oh,
this you cannot do. I told him, okay, Mr. Bottestock, you take your motor out of your automobile, the 100 horsepower motor, put a 25 horsepower motor, because you're wasting gasoline.
Mm-hmm. Sorry,
yeah. Yeah, this is different, he said. Anyway, after long arguments, he finally agreed that he made electricity. But I had a newspaper advertisement from the TVA. Use electric heat for your housing.
Yeah.
I told him this. He said, this is TVA, it's not me.
Different outfit. Yeah.
Different outfit.
Okay, that's
well, then we in Fort Smith, we had first problems to get organized, problems to get tools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to ask you about that. Some of the problems with making parts.
Yeah.
Did you make any specific parts for the V2 that you couldn't get elsewhere? Did you do some of that? Or?
Oh, it's just modified
parts.
What about the program in the child of
friends? Yeah.
We need tools. And you always hire for tools. And then one day, a sergeant came running, we have a whole boxcar full of tools now, come and get it. So we all went to the warehouse, there was a boxcar full of shovels and picks, all made of clay.
Yeah.
It came from a powder production place.
Hmm.
And he didn't know, as I said, you needed 60 shovels and axes and heads and stuff. We need a machine to replace the milling machine with two drivers.
That's a good story, yeah. What, did you have any stories about top sawing? Had any contact with
that? Top sawing was always a guy, in our opinion, who was protecting us and helping us.
Mother hen, yeah.
Mother hen over the whole place.
Yeah.
And there was never by anybody any hard feeling about top sawing. Everybody liked him.
Yeah.
Even they had not seen him for a long time.
He was in Washington.
He was in Washington, yeah. He was in Boston. James Hemmings.
Yeah, what?
Handled the works in Boston.
How was he the work for?
Well, he was under the commanding general from
yeah, Boston. I mean, was it easy to work for him or hard? Was he a difficult man?
He was a man who was once in a while very friendly and nice, but once in a while very, I would say, difficult.
Mm-hmm. But he never knew from day to day just what kind of mood he might be.
So he was generally not as much liked as he thought he should be like.
Mm-hmm.
He never could gain our heart.
Yeah.
So is it true?
Yeah. Well, that's important. That's it.
Yeah.
How about this?
He made once in a while effort. On the other hand, he did things to us which he did not appreciate.
Who were some of the other people there that you recall, some of the GE people? Did you work close to any of them at the time?
I remember, he was a manager of the GE. He was never there, but he came on for a visit to survive.
Yeah, of course, Porter was one of
them. Porter, yeah.
Yeah,
he was there.
What about Hermes now? What was the story there? Here you had the LEV-3 and the experience on the V-2. Did they start working on their own guidance system? That's an interesting story.
They were pretty isolated from us.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty, but I don't know if the right word is arrogant, but I should say. Yes, a little bit in the background. They did not want to take our advice. I remember I had a talk with Porter about silo design.
Mm-hmm.
He did not accept it all anything.
No. He thought he knew a better way of doing it or what?
He just didn't want to talk to us.
No.
He was below his dignity, I guess.
What? Theoretical?
Below his dignity.
Oh, really?
Yeah. To talk to prisoners of peace or...
Oh, well, he was in the group that went over and selected a lot of the
people. Yeah.
But he still had no...
I don't think Porter was very, very, very easygoing for people.
Mm.
It was isolation.
Yeah.
Maybe he could do well with some Brown, but on the lower level, he was fucked up.
Yeah.
We had in the first few months a lot of industry people in for interrogation. They asked us questions. Why is this, and what is this, and how is this? For example, a member thought, what kind of ball bearing should we use for the title? I told him our ball bearing test, the case, the retainer of the ball bearing was plastic. Hmm. And it was cooked in oil. So it had permanent lubrication. And much less friction.
Uh-huh.
Much longer lifetime.
Yeah.
And you have a steel retainer. For the body, you can't lubricate the retainer. And the oil is gone, the retainer is naked, and it's friction, and the ball bearing is gone.
Mm-hmm.
And about precision potentiometer.
Is it a porous bearing to hold it, retain the oil, or is it a porous material?
No, the retainer.
Ah.
See, a ball bearing consists of four parts.
Yeah.
Inner rays and outer rays,
sure.
So many balls,
right.
In the ball retainer.
Yeah.
And the retainer is a lubricator for the ball.
Yeah.
And the lubricator was made of plastic.
I see. Okay.
I mean, there's a retainer. The
retainer was fine.
So, this was new. And there were new things in relay technology. The relays are really developed to a high degree of perfection that we had in those countries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Also,
did you work on the relay programs at Mercury? Did you do some redesign of relays?
We did all the relay design, yeah.
Yeah.
And then, electrical potentiometer for measuring purposes,
mm-hmm.
pickup potentiometer for silos.
Yeah.
Such things were of high accuracy and high technology developed in Europe, not known here in this country.
Oh, really? So in some places you were ahead, in other places you were behind.
Yeah.
Technology.
Yeah. For instance, I think in the shortwave technology, America was way ahead of us.
Mm-hmm.
The gyro field and control field.
Mm-hmm.
We were ahead of them.
Mm-hmm. Some of the companies did not. Oh.
They're always.
All of the likes of you. Or
yeah.
You know. But there's quite a bit of that going on for a while, yeah.
Right. About kind of design, about materials, about motors, mixing computers, and those kinds of things.
Yeah. Okay, that's
about it.
Not it, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Ask that question. There are no photographs, as far as we know then, of the V-2s taking off during combat.
No.
He never took any during the war. That was too dangerous,
he
I guess.
Never, he said he never took. You know, that he made those photographs, of course, and then...
Do you think the Germans themselves ever photographed any of these operations? Because I've never seen photographs of the operational firings of the V-2.
Just,
and I suppose they themselves
that didn't... That is announced to me. During the war, no.
During the war, I don't...
Believe,
so there's probably no existing photograph then of this, yeah.
He was always observing it.
Well, where was he? How far away from the firings was he?
No, not very far. He dwelt at... here in the neighborhood in Rosenau.
Well, how did he? Did he hide? Or how did he do it? Do you know how he actually did these? Did he hide them?
No, by means of a looking glass. In the neighborhood, for instance, in the neighborhood of his of his house, there was a railway dike, eh?
Mm-hmm.
And beside it, at a given moment, here had there somewhere behind it, and there he was at the night, and an explosion was taking place because one of the V-2s were coming down, and the dike was quite at all away,
mm-hmm.
but he got in every case not killed. But in that neighborhood, of that fire deck, you have and have you
just a minute. Okay, in the neighborhood of the house.
There was a railway.
Mm-hmm.
A railway from the edge. Yes. A railway. A railway. Dike. A dike that is... you know what
yeah.
is a dike?
Oh, yes. Very definitely. Yeah.
No. And then you have here. So, and this is the seasoning in the direction of Felipe Nien, so, and he's off the direction of the edge.
see. Let's see. Okay.
And then you ain't see it at all.
Mm-hmm.
And you get raw photo in PDF. And see if Austin was an eye. So
Vassanar, you say, Vassanar,
yeah.
Vassanar.
And so you can come to Leiden.
To Leiden, mm-hmm.
And this was a viaduct.
That was a viaduct, I see.
And then here there were landing sites.
Landing, launching?
Launching sites.
All right.
And then he observed here.
And he observed right on the viaduct, the intersection between the railway
under the
viaduct.
Yeah, this at A.
Uh-huh.
At A. Uitenbogen. Uitenbogen.
Mm-hmm.
Observed.
V2.
The launching.
And he had some sort of an optical glass.
Yes, optical glass.
But he never dared take any pictures.
No.
Now, did he report his findings to the British by radio?
He used.
Mm-hmm.
He used an optical glass.
An optical glass, I see. Mm-hmm.
Here the launching glass.
And what would the distance be from the launching site and the viaduct under which he was hiding?
No, that was perhaps 700 meters.
700 meters, I see. So was he alone, or did he have somebody with him?
He was happy always alone.
Now,
it was, of course, dangerous to be there with more men, and then to look. It was even dangerous to look at.
At alone. Well, now, how did he get about, if there were so many different launching sites, and that they were launching day and night, I gather, how could he be certain that he observed all the firings and therefore make the table of the failures? He must have had some help. He had to go to bed. He couldn't watch every launching, could he?
No, he was head of the whole crew.
So he had other people watching at all times.
Other people.
So he's fairly convinced that he did get all the launches.
Yeah.
I see. Uh-huh.
He was here when there was here an explosion that the whole dike was destroyed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And there was here a car, a German car, here in the neighborhood. And that evening, and then the explosion took place, he had tried to find protection under that car.
Under the car, right?
And Germans of the car had been in a ditch here in the neighborhood.
Oh, they left the car and gone into a ditch, and he jumped under the car.
Under the car.
Uh-huh.
And then the German officer came back, and he came. Coming from under the car, and the German said you have had great luck because the car was full of explosives.
Oh, God. Oh, fantastic.
So
he got under a car full of explosives.
Yes. Perhaps what can he use
all
those? Yes, it's of course not of importance.
Well, it's interesting, tell you, who was Uitenbogen? What was his normal job before the war? What did he do? Was he a technical man or a scientific man?
He was a chemical engineer.
Chemical engineer before the war?
Yes.
And all during the war he served with the intelligence? Or did he have a regular job during the day?
He belonged to the directorium, of the Shell.
A Shell?
Yes.
But during the war, did they keep operating?
During the war, he had nothing to do.
Well, how did he get money to eat?
Yes. That is again a question about which I cannot give an answer.
Mm-hmm.
I have not spoken about this particular victim.
Mm-hmm.
That he was rather good conditions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, he must have had some job, at least as far as appearances went. I mean, the Germans would have to think that he's doing something.
No, he had a job. He had a job. How? You had also an organization, a scientific organization, did something which was for the Germans not so very interesting.
Right,
you had an everyday something to do.
Mm-hmm. What did you do during the war? You at the university?
In the
during the time, that time I was in prison. In prison, uh-huh. During the occupation. I have also been I have also been at the age of later.
Uh-huh.
I have been in prison in that period.
Uh-huh.
Yes, also because there was nothing more to do at the age. I was teaching there, and I have during some time the director of an aeronautical school there,
mm-hmm.
in order to form the German mechanical engineers for airplanes.
I see. And this went on during the war. That continued.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they didn't bother you much then?
That had been, not, that had been in the war.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I see. Yeah.
Personally, I have not given any contribution
to this whole area of observation. That was an intelligence.
Professor Eitenbogart was also no rocket man.
No.
No.
He just observed these fires, that was it?
Yes, only, yes.
I see.
And of course England was of course very interesting for their launching places.
Mm-hmm.
Not only for the launching places, but also for the launching tables.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Right, which you are finding also descriptions, mm-hmm. how the mm-hmm. launching was taking place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well,
Were not that hardest of all?
That has been an exception, because mainly the Germans were with their launching places here. Here.
Mm-hmm.
And also here.
Mm-hmm.
Also launching places.
Yeah, what was that area called?
The territory of the Queen.
What was that called?
How was it called?
Is it on your list that we have? This?
That will be on the list.
Oh, okay. Well, that's all right. That's not too important. It's all in that
here,
area.
But here you have also launching places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And
In the woods.
In the woods. Now we.
That was territory of the Queen.
That was owned by the Queen.
For a territory.
Territory of the Queen.
A territory.
T-O-R-Y, yeah.
Of
territory
the
of the Queen. Mm-hmm. But you yourself were very interested in rockets before the war.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So this was, I suppose, of academic interest, at least, to you, to know what the Germans were doing. Did you have any idea how far they'd advanced before they moved into Holland? With the
V-2? No, I have heard that we had... that he were, of course, occupying the developing rockets.
Mm-hmm. Had you ever heard of Peenemünde? Was that a name known to you at that time?
We have heard about it during the war about it.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a name Peenemünde that we knew that on the north coast.
So something was going on.
Was going on.
Yeah, but you didn't, yeah.
This is all very dangerous in the
time
to speak about it.
Oh, I know, yeah. Well, I suppose especially in an occupied country.
Yeah.
It was just.
Yes, it was occupied.
Yeah.
It was very degree of a situation.
Yeah, I can well imagine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For instance, if you was finding something and there was a surface, then you were killed immediately.
No question.
Without any question. If you had something, even a small piece of belonging to a rocket, you were killed.
What do you think happened to the rockets that failed? What did the Germans do with the pieces? A rocket that went off.
The pieces were, of course, falling down and staying at different places. And, of course, we tried to find those pieces. But on the other hand, we had not so very much time to occupy themselves with it, so that many pieces were laying down there without more.
Mm-hmm.
We have also found different pieces. I have found.
Did you keep any?
Oh, yeah.
Mm, what sorts of parts? Do you have a...
No, for instance, a German I have found.
Well, did you, this is after the war or
no,
during the war?
No, after the war.
Not, you wouldn't dare keep it during the war?
I have at home, if you are interested by it, you can see it at home.
Mm-hmm.
Not only a turbine, but only the compressor, also the compressor.
Oh, the compressor.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. Very interesting.
That we have found after the war.
After the war.
In this territory.
Just in this war. I'd love to come back.
During the war, it was impossible to send there. It was very dangerous. It was prohibited, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But now, give me your address, and perhaps in the next few weeks I could come and see you.
Yeah.